on the number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
All right, so we're heading into the NBA playoffs. The regular season will end on Wednesday, and Kobe Bryant's final game and Golden State's pursuit of 73. But then the playoffs will begin. Now, all season long, we've been talking about how really in the NBA, there are three teams. Now, maybe there's four if you want to count Oklahoma City. But in reality, there are three teams. Cleveland, San Antonio, and of course, Golden State. And the concession has been, yeah, well, the Cavaliers may be up and down, and they've been going, you know, with a lot of drama, and then they get their act together, and then they get more drama, then they get their act together, and then they're bored, and all of those things. But in the end, all of that will get pushed aside. All of that will be taken care of when the playoffs start. They'll go into that secondary mode, and they'll pretty much cruise to the East. I want to know right now if that is a reality. Is that still a reality? Are the Cleveland Cavaliers more vulnerable than we think? Because I will tell you, I think they are. I think they are. Now, don't get me wrong. I think they're going to still win the conference. But I think it's going to be some work. And I think there's going to be some stress. And I think there's going to be drama. I think some team like the Celtics is going to push them. I think Toronto could give them a good little run. I think in the end, though, it's hard to beat LeBron in a seven-game series. But as we were talking earlier tonight, you get a team that comes in disciplined. You get a team that comes in focused, that doesn't have the drama, that there's no infighting. Everyone knows their role, and they know exactly what to do. I think they give Cleveland enough of a scare. And if LeBron has to push, he may not get the response that he wants. I don't think the East is a cakewalk for the Cavaliers, as we've been saying all year. I think now when I look at it, I see some teams that are going to be up for the challenge. Now, granted, in the end, though, I think Cleveland does win it, and I think they go to the finals. But there's going to be moments where LeBron James is going to wonder where the heart is of his basketball team. And that's the way I'm seeing the Cavaliers now. And it's been a wild, wild year. We've been talking about this for weeks. I mean, there's just been so much drama. And a lot of it is LeBron-centric, right? He does this kind of thing. And a lot of it is because he likes to be in the news, and he likes to have the radar on him, and he likes to make sure that people remember who he is. When everybody's all falling in love with all these other basketball players, LeBron at times wants to remind you where he really is in the NBA world. But that being said, I wouldn't mind seeing a team make Cleveland sweat. The only problem is I don't want to see anybody else out of the East in the finals. Let's be honest. I love the Celtics. I would love for the Celtics to make a strong run. Entertainment-wise, they're not ready to take on anybody in the West. Cleveland's got at least the best player in the world. And they've got a team that's still got Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, and we didn't see that last year in the finals. We didn't see those three together in the finals. So, as far as entertainment goes, I want to see a very entertaining finals. Now, I don't get that with anybody else in the Eastern Conference. I get up and coming. I get step in the right direction. I get, you know, we're playing above our expectations. But do I get, yeah, the East is going to bring out its best team to the most formidable team it can against the best in the West, which will probably be Golden State. It's like the Western Conference Finals. If I don't get anything but San Antonio, Golden State, I'm going to be massively disappointed. Even if it's the very injured Memphis Grizzlies catch fire, or Dallas is all of a sudden playing good basketball, or Portland comes through. I don't want to see any of these teams in the finals. It's Golden State or San Antonio. And likewise in the East, I think it's going to be a difficult and at times trying road for the Cleveland Cavaliers, but in the end, I think they pull through, but it's tougher than people think. And then after that, I don't know. I think Golden State wins in five. They're just so good and so deep. 800-777-2907 if you want to comment on that. And also, if you just joined us, we're trying to define Kobe Bryant. His final game is coming up on Wednesday. For those of you who grew up in the Michael Jordan era, you know that Michael Jordan established himself as the best basketball player to ever play. Kobe, though, tried very, very hard and valiantly to try to at least be in the conversation. I said earlier that there's a generation out there that's Kobe is the best. They maybe have been born in the early 90s, and Kobe's the best they've ever seen. Five titles. As soon as they were aware of the NBA, it was Kobe and Shaq. Five titles, all the points, the incredible box scores, the incredible numbers, the clutch shots, the fadeaway, everything that he's meant for the game. Being in Los Angeles, being in the spotlight. There's a generation that knows Kobe, just like there'll be a generation that knows only really LeBron, even though there's a good crossover between Kobe and LeBron. But there'll be a generation that remembers LeBron, and there'll maybe a generation that remembers Steph. But the reality is that Kobe is really on that upper echelon. But how do you define him? I mean, I looked at the numbers, and the thing that pops out is obviously the scoring. But a lot of it is the incredible amount of shots that he took, the incredible amount of points that he scored. He's one of the all-time greatest scorers of all time. But I think overall, it's how do we define him? Five championships in L.A.? Even if he had Shaq, it doesn't matter. Five championships in L.A. And sometimes where you play does matter. And the identity of what you are as a player in that city, or how that city defines you, it does matter. I mean, I talk about Larry Bird a lot. Back in the 80s, you would have, you know, Bird and Magic. And there was an actual shoe commercial in which Larry Bird's in French Lick. It's a Converse ad. And Larry Bird's in French Lick shooting baskets on some old outdoor court in Indiana. And here comes a limo. And Magic gets out of the limo, and they talk about MVPs and shoes and all that stuff. And they basically play a one-on-one game in French Lick. And it's a cool ad, and it's sort of the cities helped make that ad. The city and the image of those cities helped make that ad. Bird was from Boston, a working class town, lunch pail kind of group of guys. And Bird was the hard-working blue-collar basketball player for the Celtics in the rundown Boston Garden that still had charm. Guys in sweaty t-shirts in a stuffy, hot arena with no air conditioning. And out in L.A., Magic Johnson's playing in front of Jack Nicholson and Diane Cannon and all the stars, and it's Flash, and it's Laker girls, and it's Showtime. And what is it in the commercial? It's limo to French Lick, Indiana. Right? So Kobe's playing in L.A., Kobe is getting the Los Angeles accolades in an organization that wins and wins a lot, that has won championships in almost every decade, and always finds their way back in, even after lulls. They're in a lull now, but they find their way back in. And he becomes one of the greatest players in an organization filled with them. Robin from Tulsa talked about Jerry West and the logo. Look, think about the Lakers. From Wilt to Jerry West to Kareem to Magic, Worthy to Kobe. I mean, it's an organization filled with some of the best names in the NBA. He's just hard to define, though. Because he's much more than just a guy who scored points. He could pass the basketball. He could rebound the basketball. He could play defense. He was intense. Now, Wednesday will be his final game. And I hope the Lakers, I hope Byron Scott, I hope he takes all the shots. I hope he scores 40. I hope it becomes more of a exhibition. And I hope he has his moment. I hope he doesn't struggle. I hope he doesn't go like 2 for 15. Obi scores and scores some more. It's really weird. Like when you think about Derek Jeter in his final game at Yankee Stadium, it's almost like out of a script, like a Twilight Zone type of script, right? The retired superstar gets up to the plate and drives in the winning run. The way that baseball game played out for Jeter to get that opportunity. Well, in basketball, if you're on the court, you can create your own opportunities. And I hope he creates many, 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 many. All right, coming up next, we're going to give you an update on a story that we had last week involving the Louisiana Tech women's basketball team, and it's not good. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, glad you could be with us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, last week, we told you the disturbing story of Tyler Summitt, the son of Pat Summitt, former Tennessee Volunteers women's basketball coach, legend in the sport. Tyler was hired at Louisiana Tech at the age of 23. He resigned abruptly. He had an improper relationship with one of his players. It is being believed that that player has gotten pregnant. And this, of course, the rumors start flying around. Who is it? Who is it? Who is it? This is the disturbing part of this story. Because when you get something scandalous like this, here's a young basketball coach and impregnating one of his players, there is going to be this, well, who's pregnant? So much so that one of his former players felt that she needed to go on Instagram to post a picture of herself with her abdomen to show she's not pregnant. Ashley Santos posted a picture of her with a basketball, basically with the hashtag not prego. That is a real problem. And everybody at Louisiana Tech should be embarrassed by this story. And I hope they are. Everybody from the top on down. The hiring of a 23-year-old kid to coach a women's basketball team might be one of the stupidest things I have ever heard in the sports world. And it should have been embarrassing to Louisiana Tech for falling in love with a 23-year-old kid just based on who his mother is. And I love how people defend this kind of stuff. Louisiana Tech basically hired Tyler Summitt because his mother is a basketball coaching legend. Oh, and by the way, when he got the recommendation, it was, oh, he's so much older than he really is. He's 23, 24, but he's like going on 40. So much, much more mature. No, that's a lie. Nobody is really like that. In the end, when push comes to shove, when you are faced with serious choices, there is a level of maturity that only comes through experience and wisdom. And you don't get that at 23 years old. You obtain that as you're progressing through being 23, 24, 25 years old. But you are not wise at 23 years old. And if you are, then I'd like to know what kind of world you live in, because it's very difficult to obtain that kind of wisdom without real life experiences. He was put in a world, a 23-year-old kid was put in a world where he was given authority over women about his age, and everybody expected him to act like he was a 45-year-old veteran at this. Very, very stupid. And the man who hired him, athletic director Tommy McClendon, should be ashamed of himself. The whole school should be ashamed of themselves, who were responsible for this hire. The fact that a player, I mean, think about this for a second. A player, a woman who's dedicating her life to be the best basketball player she could possibly be, felt the need to go on social media and show a picture of herself in a pair of shorts and a sports bra showing her stomach that she's not pregnant. What in the world and how in the world did we get here, Louisiana Tech? Well done. Absolutely insane. And you know what's sad? Is that his mother's image of being one of the most incredible basketball coaches, forget women's coaches, basketball coaches of all time, is stained by the idiocy of her son. Compiled on to the idiocy of the organization, the school, for hiring him in the first place. Oh, and that wasn't the only problem Tyler Summitt had. According to parents, he had favoritism to one player who transferred with him from Marquette. It's incredible. Girls now have to answer whether or not they slept with their basketball coach. Ugh, what a terrible story. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. I know this has been getting, it's a scandalous story that people like get drawn to, but my God, it's just, to me, it's more about the stupidity and just this feeling of name. Got to get name. It's a name. We got to get a name. Yeah, Louisiana Tech is a basketball program that's had success. All right, I know 1999 was not, it's not like it was yesterday, but they went to a Final Four. They have a couple of national championships in the school's program when they played at different levels, not necessarily Division I. So they have a proud school, a proud program. It's got a history of some success. And they swam in this pool? Hey, let's get the son of maybe it'll did you think he was going to turn you into Tennessee? Did you think all of a sudden you were going to compete with UConn because a Summitt was at the helm? Ridiculous.
What do you think? At least two or three more girls come out with photos similar the one that was posted yesterday?
Right, because you know, like I said, we live in a scandalous world now. Everybody wants to know who's the pregnant player, who's pregnant with Tyler Summitt's kid. So these girls are going to feel like they got to answer. Like, yep. Leave me alone. No more suspicions. Right. That's what this girl felt like she had to do.
Yeah,
she had to come out and say, I got to make a statement that I'm not pregnant. So here's a picture of me wearing a sports bra and some shorts to show you that I don't have a baby bump.
Yeah, and now you can leave me alone.
Now you can leave me alone. In a scandal I had nothing to do with, now you can leave me alone because my coach is an immature child. Ugh. Way to go. You know, I've been reading back and forth on people who are saying, well, you know, he's 24, 20, I think he's 25 now. You know, his coaching career shouldn't be over. But I got to be honest with you. I don't know. I don't know how long it's going to take for him to get back into this world.
I think we were talking last night. We mentioned at least 10 years.
It's got to be, right? You can't live this scandal down. You got a kid now with a former player. How do you pitch yourself as a changed person? You know, you may be like, well, I'm now 40 and I'm not going to do that anymore. But it's like, yeah, but you know, parents are and players talk. And it's just, you know what? It's something we just don't want to get into.
In my opinion, he has to go to junior college level somewhere in there and coach boys.
That's right.
Not girls. Go coach a college team that's men's college basketball. Most likely the junior college level, somewhere in that NAIA, somewhere in those type of levels. He's not going to get a Division I or Division II, probably not even a Division III job. Maybe a Division III, but it's got to be coaching men's college basketball, not women's.
You know what's really sad is that how many people, when they saw this story 2 years ago that were kind of paying attention to women's basketball and saw that this 23-year-old kid got hired, how many people went, I kind of know how this is going to turn out. Like, just guessing, like, it's just too toxic.
Did you know he had that job?
I knew he had the job only because it was news in Nashville.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I had no idea because of
Pat Summitt. If I didn't live in Nashville, I would not have known about it. The local radio station I listened to had the story when he got hired 2 years ago. And they were actually saying, boy, 23, he's a coach. He's a head coach of a women's basketball team because Pat Summitt is still pretty legendary. And he was a very prominent kid. Like she had him like
he was everywhere.
Everywhere. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. If you haven't liked our Facebook page, please do. We'd like to invite you in. say hi. We'd like to say hi back. I want to say hi to Edward Garcia and George Mitchell, who commented on our Altitude Sports news that we are on Altitude 950 in Denver. So thank you very much for posting, guys. Appreciate it. George says he wishes we were back in Northeast Oklahoma. I do, too. And Edward Garcia says, good job. Love the show. Well, we love you guys. So, again, like us on Facebook, Tony D Radio Show. Say hi. We'd love to say hi back. Adam, I saw the most incredible thing on the weekend. I think it was on, I want to say it was on one of the ESPN channels, but I'm not 100% sure because it could have been on one of the crazy other sports channels that I have. I could not stop watching this. I saw a video game e-sport competition between the University of Tennessee and UT Arlington playing some sort of video game.
It's really starting to take off.
This thing is exploding. Exploding. I watched this thing, and the reason I couldn't take my eyes off it, and I didn't even know the game. It was some, I didn't even want to guess what game it was. Legion of Doom, I'm thinking maybe something along those lines. Here were the things I was really impressed with. One, I was impressed with, like, the crowd. There was actual people watching this and cheering this and knowing exactly what they were cheering and why they were cheering. Two, the level of school pride. Like, Tennessee's team was all dressed in their orange and white and high-fiving each other while they played these video games and whatnot whenever they did something great. And the third one, I don't know who the guy is that's doing play-by-play, but he's the Vin Scully of video game play-by-play. Whoever this was, and was a rather young guy, he knew exactly what was going on. And he just, and the way he would just, in this small, just cadence of like an orchestra, he would describe every little aspect of this game. You know, and he would say it like so matter-of-factly, like, yeah, one of the benefits of having this is that he can morph into this character, and then, as you see right there, he annihilates the entire... It was just incredible. This is really going to be... This is going to take off. Now, I saw TBS at a show where they were, like, talking about, like, world championships. And they were doing it at, like, the Staples Center in front of, like, 30,000 people to play these video games. But it was weird to see colleges going up against each other. UT Arlington and Tennessee battling in some video game I'd never heard of or have ever played, and yet it was as intense and energized as a sporting event.
So are we going to see like recruiting battles soon?
Or, yeah, you think?
Michigan versus Ohio State trying to get a kid out of Columbus. Michigan trying to poach him.
This is news I'm like trying to hide from my kid. Right? Like this is news. This is like propaganda that I don't want him to know.
Right.
Like, you know, like there's scholarships given out to people who play video games for a living. It's like if he asks, hey dad, do they have college video game tournaments and scholarships? No, who told you that? That's stupid. And meanwhile, it's true. Cause I just don't want to get
dad, I'm not playing football anymore. I'm going to concentrate all my efforts on video games.
Yeah. This Legion of Doom game. I'm just going to play this until I'm excellent at it for 14 hours straight. Is that okay? You know, my wife and I were talking about, cause we're moving, you know, to New Jersey for my wife's job and setting up shop there. And my wife is already looking into soccer clubs for my daughter. Cause you know, she's trying to get better at soccer and play, you know, high school soccer and whatnot. And so my wife was talking to some people at her work, and one of the women who she works with, her daughter's in soccer, and she started giving my wife brochures for like camps, right? It's like overnight camps over the summer for like 10, 11-year-olds, overnight 3-day camps. And so I was talking about this and I said, when did we turn the corner as a society? Like when did we turn the corner where this kind of stuff became mainstream? Like, of course you want your kid to be excellent at sports. And that's why we've created this travel team and this super camp and this other super camp and this type of program and specialized training. Like at what point, like if I were to do a graph of youth sports, what era was it where there was a generation where getting my kid excellent at sports and on track for some scholarship hope became the most important thing. Because I'd really like to find out. Because when I was a kid, I don't remember my parents pushing me athletically at all. Like, at all. Like, they were like, you want to play? Play. If you don't want to play, well, I don't care. And I remember, like, when I took up golf and I was playing high school golf, I was a pretty good golfer for, you know, a New Hampshire kid. But my father never was like, hey, you hit the ball pretty good? We're off to David Ledbetter's camp down in Florida for 21 days. Like, no. He was like, hey, you're good for a New Hampshire kid that only gets to play 6 months out of the year. Like, there was just this overriding rationale to life. Like, nah, I'm not going to do anything with this. And yet, you see youth sports today, it's a multi-billion dollar industry of this specialized training. So when I watch this video game stuff, and basically to come around back to that, when I watch this video game stuff, okay, these kids are all of them, pretty much self-taught. Like, if they get a scholarship to attend UT Arlington on a video game playing scholarship, when the time comes to say, I want to thank all the people that got me here, the short answer is you. Because I doubt your parents are sending you to some video game camp so you can work on your Legion of Doom skills. And nor do I think you have a personalized trainer that is helping you navigate these sort of make-believe video game worlds where you can start racking up points and racking up lives. This is all on you. No coach, no parents, no nothing. I remember Saturday Night Live in the 80s did a parody of chess team coach Jim Belushi. Played an out-of-control Bobby Knight-like chess team coach. It was pretty funny. You know, Bobby Knight was the rage at the time for throwing chairs and throwing a fit, right, and being over the top. And so they used that as kind of a parody. So Jim Belushi played a chess coach in New York who was, like, screaming at his kids and flipping the board and yelling, and Knight to Rook 3! Knight to Rook 3! If in 10 years... we've reached a point where parents are sending their kids to video game camp so that their kids can be excellent at video games because college scholarships are riding on it. We ain't coming back. We ain't coming back.
I mean, can you just imagine going up to someone who, say, is in 10 years, say they're 60, and they're like, oh, where do you go to school? You're like, Tennessee. Oh, what do you do there? Oh, I got a scholarship to play video games.
Yeah.
That guy's going to look at you and be like, what did you just say?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it was one of the strangest things. I couldn't stop watching. I'm going to be honest with you. I just couldn't stop. And I didn't know the game. It's not like they were playing Madden. They were playing some game I never heard of.
It'd be cool if they're playing like the original Mario Brothers.
Wouldn't that be great? Now that's what I want to see. It's like all these kids playing these games. You want it tough? Play Centipede.
Right.
All right? Play Asteroid when you finally thrust your ship and you're flying all over the place. You have hardly any control and the asteroids are flying all over the place. Play that. Play Missile Command with its 75 buttons. How difficult was that? Pac-Man. I loved Pac-Man. I loved Miss Pac-Man more, but I like Pac-Man. I remember when I was a kid, like, we had a place called Fun Spot in New Hampshire. It had all these video games. And you take your report card and you got so many tokens for an A and a B. Every report card, we'd go down there. Every report card. Just like got all these tokens. Go around. And then remember when you used to have to put your token? Like if you wanted to play Donkey Kong, you'd have to put your token right next to, like you were in line. Oh my God, that's great. Now, forget it. These kids are going to be locked away going, you know what? Yeah, it's time to go to bed, son. Oh, okay. You want to pay for college? Go ahead. But if you want to just let me stay up for another 3 hours, I might be able to take that huge cost off your shelves. Okay. Stay up as late as you want. Oh, my God. We're not coming back.
Feeding your kid Red Bull and
exactly
cocaine. Have this,
Red Bull and cocaine. While they master the Wizard's Maze on level 43. Oh, my God. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for joining us as we continue through the night tonight. The Jackie Robinson documentary on PBS is really good. First one was tonight. They also will have it, I think tomorrow night is part two. So it was 2 hours. Ken Burns does it. And if you know Ken Burns, Civil War and all those other documentaries that he does, he's got a particular style of documentary work. And it was really, really good. A lot of video, which I didn't know still was kicking around. A lot of video, a lot of pictures. He uses a lot of pictures. Like the whole Civil War. Have you ever seen the Civil War series? The Ken Burns Civil War? It's great because he found all of these pictures and he found all of this, diaries and stuff like that. And he got actors to voice the diaries, but then he used the pictures to really make the point about how this war, what this war looked like. And so in telling the Jackie Robinson story, they wanted to talk about all of it, like from the very, very beginning all the way through his junior college days in Pasadena to his time at UCLA to playing football. They had football video of Jackie Robinson playing against Washington. It was just really great. And then, of course, his time with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And Rachel Robinson, his wife, is still alive, and she was part of the documentary. And it's so great. It's a real blessing to have her at, even though she's at an older age, to have a lot of her memory still picturesque. Because her first person accounts of the struggles of Jackie Robinson are absolutely necessary to tell this story. Because she made the point that she went to every home game when he played for the Brooklyn Dodgers. And he wanted her to see everything so she could be a witness to everything. Like if somebody said something or fans reacted in a particular way, that she could see something. Because they knew they were fighting. They were fighting for something. It was really, really good. It was really good. I didn't know. There was one part of the documentary I didn't know. I was like really blown away. You know how there was a story about how the Dodgers were in Cincinnati, and in Cincinnati, the fans in Cincinnati had mercifully booed and threw racial epithets at Jackie Robinson and really were hard on him, and that Pee-wee Reese came over to him and put his arms around him.
Yeah.
And the documentary makes a point that that's just a story. That there's no evidence that that actually took place. That nobody wrote about it. There's no pictures of it. No one actually has an account of it. But yet somehow it's made it into folklore. But it could be true. It may be true. But I always thought it was taken as fact that Pee Wee Reese did that. But there is no question that he and Jackie Robinson were tight. Because there was a picture that Rachel wanted to use for a statue. Because there's a statue of that moment, but there's no evidence that it happened. I couldn't believe this because I remember thinking, no way, this had to have happened. Why wouldn't this have happened? Why would everybody say this did? This is one of the more iconic moments in the struggle of Jackie Robinson was the fact that Pee Wee Reese from the Cincinnati area in his hometown went to Jackie Robinson, put his arms around him to comfort him at his moment of when the crowd was really on his case, showing solidarity between a white man and a black man on a baseball diamond, and more importantly, teammates accepting each other as teammates and fighting the same fight. And yet, they say that may not have happened. But Rachel Robinson pointed to a picture that she had of Jackie and Pee Wee Reese coming off the field, and they had grabbed hands after a play, and they had grabbed hands. And she wanted the statue to be that, but she got turned down for the now famous pose. But I did not know that. I did not know that. I always kind of took that as fact. And I did not know that that's really, that it could have been fact, but it's mostly in folklore. But it's a really well done. Again, Ken Burns doesn't mess around with these documentaries. He really gets the real details and tries to get as much first-person account as he can. Like I said, the Civil War series was good because he ended up with diaries, personal diaries of people who fought in the Civil War, and then used that as a basis for telling the basic history of the Civil War. And in this case, he got people who... He had interviews of people who were around at that time and what it meant and how, hey, you know, Jackie Robinson struggled with anger. Like he really was angry at all this, but knew he had to, he could not strike back for the good of the cause. He could not lend, he could not, you know, give that credence. He couldn't give himself over to those instincts, even though he was justified in those instincts for the good of the cause. And so far, this is really, really, really good. So I recommend it. If you haven't had a chance to see it, check it out. It's on PBS, Ken Burns and the documentary on Jackie Robinson, because we're coming up to the anniversary of his first ever baseball game in the 40s. 800-777-2907. So I think we put the finishing touches on Wednesday's viewing of Kobe Bryant versus the Golden State Warriors. We're going to watch Kobe's final game. Maybe catch the Warriors at the end. Is that what we came up with? Watch a little Kobe Bryant finishing out his career.
Yeah, watch mostly Kobe and then finish up with the Warriors.
Get the Warriors 73. Gosh.
What if the Warriors lose?
That would be great. I don't know why I'm not rooting for this, but something about the Bulls that I kind of want. I'm not even a Bulls fan, and I kind of want to keep it intact.
Honestly, I mean, really, they should have lost to Memphis the last game they just played.
I know, they did. In Memphis on Saturday. 199.
Wasn't an idiot.
Yeah. Do you realize the Memphis Grizzlies are basically, you know, grabbing anybody they can to play basketball for?
Yeah.
Them?
Yeah, they just.
That's basically it. It's like, oh, did you ever play basketball? Would you like a 10-day contract to play in the NBA? Oh, really? Oh, no, seriously, we need bodies because everybody on this team is hurt. That's basically the Memphis Grizzlies in a nutshell. And they almost beat the Golden State Warriors, who made no mistake, wanted to win that game, needed to win that game, and made no bones about it that they absolutely want this record. So maybe the Grizzlies can pull it off, and they'll be tied at 72. Yahoo Sports Radio.